Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And it's our last episode of 2018. Rira, 2018 is finally over.
Woo. I'm so excited.
Excited to ring in 2019 or excited this year is over?
I'm excited that this year is over.
How have you been? As you can hear, I am back in sunny Los Angeles. We're mere days before the end of the year. How was your Christmas?
So I was sick in the last episode, and I was incredibly sick for the week of Christmas.
Well, was this the same sickness, or were you attacked by a different one?
I was attacked by a different one. It attacked my lungs, and I threw up a lot.
Oh no!
And I honestly thought that I would not make it today. But somehow I did. So I'm very proud of myself for getting out of my house and driving all the way here.
I'm excited too, because didn't we schedule this like a week ago?
Yeah, we did. We really did. And I was just like, will I be well enough to record with Marvin? Will I be coughing a lot? I don't know. Time will tell.
We still have tomorrow before the weekend if we had to, so that's all good.
That's true. You guys might be listening to this in 2019.
And I'm gonna try to get it out before New Year, so hopefully.
What an ambitious goal!
But then, if you are lazy podcast listeners, you might be listening to us in 2019, or if you want to wait till after you've read our December book. Although before we get to our December book club pick, which is Young Jane Young by Gabrielle Zevin, it's been a while since we went over the book news, and there's been we're not gonna go over everything we missed because that would take way too long.
And also, I was really sick, so. My memory span is not great.
But we do have a couple recent book news that Rira has compiled that we're going to go over real quick to get you caught up on what's to come, which is a lot more awesomeness from Asian and Asian American authors. I guess let's start with the biggest news of the holiday season. I don't know if you saw this little video that Lana Connor put up on, was it Twitter or Netflix?
It was Netflix. Okay. Netflix posted it on Twitter and their Instagram.
Your wishes have been heard by the Netflix overlords, and you will be getting more Lara Jean in the near future.
Yeah, I'm so excited for the sequel. I mean, we all knew that it was inevitable, but like, I'm so glad that they agreed to it, and I'm so glad that they're doing it now instead of like waiting until everyone is kind of like too old to play teens anymore.
Well, also, this was like, they made the first movie in like a year, so it's a pretty like easy production, I think, for them.
Yeah. Judging from the video, it seems that they are including John Ambrose McLaren, who is kind of like the third wheel to the love triangle.
Well, he was in the first movie.
He was kind of like teased. I'm not sure how they're going to do the sequel. I'm not sure if it's two films. They might just make one more film, because they didn't say like how many movies that they're going to be making. So I'm like wondering if they're going to go more with the second book or if they're going to go with the third book. I would prefer if they went with the third book, because the second book, there's like so much like back and forth between John Ambrose and Peter. And it's like, I'd rather focus on,
but isn't that the drama?
No,
isn't that where the drama comes from? You need the triangle.
No, because like in the third book, it's about like college. It's about like Peter going to a different college than Lana.
Growing up.
Why did I say Lana? Lara Jean. similar names. And I just think that it would make more sense if they're having that dilemma on top of, like, dealing with a third person in their relationship. Because you know how, like, high school couples are. Like, once they go to college, like, that relationship kind of, like, is tested.
I guess, but didn't they already include part of the second book in the first movie?
They like, did?
The last scene of the first movie was the first scene of the second book, right?
I would say, like, the first quarter of the second book.
Okay.
In the second book, it's a lot of John Ambrose and Lara Jean, because they're, like, helping out at, like,
Because that's the drama.
At a senior home, and, like, this old lady is trying to, like, hook them up together.
Oh.
I mean, it's endearing, but I honestly think that there is more meat in the third book. I am saying this as someone who majored in screenwriting, Marvin. My useless degree. It has to come into use sometime.
Well, I mean, they're going to milk this for as long as possible, so we'll probably, I don't know.
Oh, speaking of To All the Boys I Loved Before, we did get an email from one of our listeners, Cece. Cece said that they enjoyed our movie chat because they haven't really heard much comparison between the movie and book when it comes to, like, To All the Boys I Loved Before.
Oh.
And they requested that
We pretty much episode. Did that for Crazy Rich Asians.
We did. but yeah, I would love to do another episode where we do talk about the second movie, but I just feel like we'll be repeating ourselves. So we'll see what happens in the movie. I have a feeling that it's going to be very different from the books.
Yeah. Well, what other books can we talk about that has had movie adaptations?
Well, Never Let Me Go. You still have not watched that?
I still have not watched that movie.
A lot of Keigo Higashino's novels.
I mean, that could be a whole separate series where we just watch. Because it's not even the movies.
Yeah, it's
they have
TV,
movies, but they have TV series.
TV
based
series,
on the,
yeah.
But Suspect X is actually, it's been
movie.
Remade like as many times as A Star is Born, I feel like.
Oh, really?
In different like languages.
I still haven't
there's,
watched
like, a
Japanese A Star
version.
Is Born.
I think there's a Korean version. And there's like a China, they made a China version too.
Yeah, that was recent. That was like last year, right? Yeah. maybe that's a segment that we'll do in the future. We'll pick a book that has been made into a movie and just talk about it.
Yeah, I think we should put that behind like a Patreon paywall or something.
I know.
We should figure out how to make money off this podcast at some point, or at least support.
At some point, we need to figure out how to do sponsorships and how to like figure out how to make this a sustainable podcast.
I know, because I mean, I've given Audible enough of my money for the books that I don't have time to read, but I listen to in my car because I'm in LA and we listen to things in our car.
Well, we're not sponsored by Libby, but I highly recommend you checking out Libby
because
it's like libraries, but it's like it's kind of like an Amazon for libraries where you can like borrow digital copies and also listen to audiobooks. I feel like you would benefit from it, Marvin.
Probably.
You don't have a library card. You should really.
I do have one.
You do have one.
From middle school.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Those still work, right? I'm still in the system.
Yeah, that's true. But do you still have your library card?
I have no idea where it is.
You should get
I'm actually in the process of cleaning out my old room.
You should just get a new library card. We can make a day out of it, Marvin. And then we can post it on Instagram and be like, look, Marvin got his first adult library card.
Well, okay, we'll leave it to our listeners. If you would like to see this super engaging content of me going to the library for the first time in like 20 years. Actually, no, that's not true. I went to the library to study when I was in grad school.
Yeah, but that was to study. Yeah. That wasn't to like borrow books.
I haven't checked out a book in maybe 2 decades.
Oh, God. Not everyone can be as rich as you, Marvin.
I just like owning books. I should get a Kindle. But then I do like the tactile feel of pages. Anyways.
Oh, don't be one of those people. I mean, you read off of screens all the time. I mean.
And I also listen to a lot of audiobooks.
All right, moving on to book deals. Our first book deal in our new segment is Feywild and Friends bought Amina May Safi's untitled YA novel inspired by Empire Records. The book follows three teens, a bookstagrammer, an aspiring poet, and a girl living through her Britney moment. I'm not sure what that means, but hey, as they try to save their dying local bookstore. Publication is slated for summer 2020.
That could mean a lot of things, really. Is it the rise of Britney? The fall of Britney? Like, I don't want to say like...
Oh, like Britney Spears?
Right? Isn't it? I don't know. What other popular Britneys are there?
I'm so out of touch with American pop culture that I would not
I
know.
I love that we're at a moment where a bookstagrammer can be the protagonist of a book. So we can like have bookstagram inception.
This is the most millennial thing that anyone can put into a book.
Hey, bookstagrammers need representation also.
That's true. There are too many white bookstagrammers.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking when it comes to that.
What are we? We're like book podders.
We're
pod bookers.
Yeah. There's a lot of book podcasts. A lot more than I thought there were.
There's a lot of readers out there.
Yeah.
And people who like talking about reading.
Good for them.
Patterson Books at Little Brown has acquired author-illustrator Jomike Tahito's debut picture book, There Was an Old Woman Who Lived in a Book. The story is about a mother who comes across classic fairy tale characters while on the quest to find her lost children. Publication is slated for January 2020. You know, we do need new folktales, so that's cool.
That's true. I never really grew up with nursery rhymes, or at least like Western nursery rhymes.
I'm just glad the old woman upgraded from her shoe to a book. I think that's moving up.
Is that a thing?
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe.
Oh.
She had so many children, she didn't know what to do. And then two other verses I forgot.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a thing, and I've never heard of it. Sterling Children's Books acquired Vicky Fong's STEM-based picture book, Event a Pet, which introduces basic coding concepts as a girl programs a mysterious machine in a quest to develop the perfect pet. The book will be illustrated by Titawan Taipinarong, hopefully I said that correctly, and is set to be published for spring 2020.
So I love that this is teaching girls
how to code.
Is this pro-eugenics, maybe? I don't know. I guess pets is okay.
I mean, isn't that what we do now? Like with pet breeding?
It's true.
We learned that in IQ.
Oh, but that's awesome. I'm going to totally give these books to my nieces when they come out. They'll be the right age to start getting interested in computers. You know, kids are super tech literate these days.
Yeah, I know. I remember what I learned how to code through Zynga, but the coding is so ancient now that it's not useful at all.
HTML code. You can still use HTML.
Yeah, but not really. Like, I remember I was able to like design my own layout. And I used that skill to make my own, like, K-pop forum. And now all of that skill has, like the code is so ancient that I can't do anything with it.
I mean, the code is ancient, but that experience led you to the person you are today.
Wow, I'm so proud of myself.
And, you know, without you, where would people talk about K-pop, right?
There are so many K-pop podcasts that, okay.
Next up, Harper Teen acquired Shweta Thakrar's contemporary YA fantasy novel, Star Daughter, inspired by Hindu mythology. The book follows a half-mortal, half-star girl who must win a celestial competition to save her human father's life. Publication is planned for summer 2020.
Yeah, this actually reminds me of Renee Rutledge, The Hour of Daydreams. If you haven't checked out that episode, please check it out. Mm. I really enjoy talking to Renee about her book. Yeah. And it also featured a star girl or celestial maiden.
Yeah.
Next up, Charlene Chua's author-illustrator debut book, Hug, was picked up by Kids Can. The picture book is about a girl who finds herself giving hug after hug until all of a sudden, she's had enough. Publication is planned for fall 2020.
You can never have enough hugs.
Oh, man, I hate giving hugs. They should really stop forcing kids to give out hugs, like, you know, consent.
That's true. This is the fundamental difference between myself and Rira's personality.
My personality is, please don't touch me.
And I'm learning about consent.
Yay! It's never too late.
Harper Teen bought Farah Naz Rishi's debut YA novel, I Hope You Get This Message. The book is set in a world where humanity on Earth is revealed to be a grand experiment that is expected to end in 7 days by its mother planet. Publication is scheduled for fall 2019. That sounds like, what's that, Hitchhiker Guy?
Oh, really? I don't...
Kind of. Well, in Hitchhiker's Guide, the planet is going to be destroyed via eminent domain, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's more like Truman Project?
Or... Yeah, Truman Project. Freaking love that movie. Final book deal in our new segment is Norton Young Readers acquired Melissa EY's picture book, Dumpling Party, which follows a girl who travels around the world within her own apartment building as she helps her grandmother collect ingredients to make different versions of dumplings for a special party. Publication is scheduled for winter 2021.
I want a dumpling party.
What other dumplings are... I guess, like, there's, like, Polish dumplings.
Every culture has dumplings.
There's, like, potato dumplings.
Yeah, it's like...
Are raviolis considered dumplings?
I think so. Because okay. It's, like, it's something doughy covering something meaty. And it's the closest thing the Europeans have to, like, Asian dumplings, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, did they steal it from us, though?
Putting stuff in other stuff is kind of a basic thing to cook. I mean, that's how sandwiches were invented, right? Are sandwiches dumplings?
No.
These are the hard-hitting questions we're asking here on Books and Boba.
All right. And
please sound off, listeners, if you think sandwiches are dumplings. Or is Marvin an idiot?
I think it's the latter. Okay, we are going to move on to our book discussion.
Yeah. Once again, our December book club pick was Young Jin Young by Gabriel Zevin. And as always, from this point forward, everything is on the table in the book, including plot twists and spoilers. So if you have not read the book yet, please read the book before coming back and listening to us. Otherwise, if you've already read a book or don't care if you get spoiled or not,
listen on.
Yeah. Let's start with the book jacket description. This is the story of five women. Meet Rachel Grossman. She'll stop at nothing to protect her daughter, Aviva, even if it ends up costing her everything. Meet Jane Young. She's disrupting a quiet life with her daughter, Ruby, to seek political office for the first time. Meet Ruby Young. She thinks her mom has a secret. She's right. Meet M. Beth Levin. She's made a career of cleaning up her congressman husband's messes. Meet Aviva Grossman. The internet won't let her or anyone else forget her past transgressions. This is a story of five women and the sexist scandal that binds them together.
Yeah. So, obviously, this book is very timely, considering the recent surge of the Me Too movement.
When was it released? It was released in 2018, right?
2017, because this is paperback. It usually takes a year for it to be...
Written pre, like, the whole...
Yeah, pre-Trump, but, it released... during the Trump presidency.
That's just good timing.
Yeah. Obviously, the book is heavily inspired by the Clinton Lewinsky scandal. Mm-hmm. I was a young child during the scandal, so obviously I don't really remember much of it. But of course, pop culture, it brings up that scandal from time to time. It was the first scandal that actually kind of crossed over to the internet. Like, we didn't have social media back then, but it was like where there were forums, there were places to comment on pictures, and it was like a scandal that was like vastly shared through the internet. So I would say like Lewinsky became like... It was like the first, she was the first case where your reputation can be completely ruined through public humiliation.
Right.
And I actually watched her TED Talk not that long ago. And it's like really interesting because she's talking about like how like we live in a culture of humiliation, how like media capitalizes on it. And the more humiliating a scandal or a gossip is, the more clicks, the more ad revenue. And there's so little compassion on the internet. And nowadays, you don't even need to have a real scandal for someone to like publicly humiliate you.
Yeah.
And, it's really interesting because cyberbullying is a really big issue among young folks nowadays. And that's pretty much what happened to Monica Lewinsky. She was cyberbullied, and there wasn't a term back then for that. And it's really sad that that a lot of women, they get trolled, they get slut-shamed, and really nothing has changed, really, except for that it has gotten a lot worse. It has gotten way more accessible to pretty much harass women on the internet.
I mean, the thing is, the promise of the internet is that it's like infinitely scalable, right? So it can make a small community feel tighter, but it can also make the world also feel smaller. So yeah, a scandal that happens in like the middle of nowhere can get picked up, get aggregated, and now like everyone knows about it and everyone's digging into your stuff, because as Aviva finds out, like, your internet presence is there permanently. You can try to
you can do your best to like delete stuff, but once it's out there on the internet, there's really no way to take it down.
Yeah, and there's a good moment in time, and it probably still happens, where, you know, people are being called out for talking about their bosses on Facebook and then getting fired. And it's like, people don't realize that what they think is private might not be. And this is something we're learning like today about how like Facebook and these internet companies deal with like work with your private, like how they use your data is like nothing is private on these things.
Yeah, and also if you think about it, like in the past like 2-3 years, there have been so many like leaks on emails and private Snapchats and like private information, and like with those leaks, so much bullying and so much harassment has kind of arose from it. And the thing is, I don't remember much about the Clinton Lewinsky scandal, but reading this book kind of like made me piece together like how big it was back then, and really just how much of a power imbalance there was. Because obviously when I was like, 10 years old, like I didn't know that Monica Lewinsky was like 22, like when she started having this affair with the president. I had no idea she was that young. I had no idea that that it was kind of gross that a man that was like almost 20 years her senior was taking advantage of an intern like that.
And it wasn't even his first scandal.
No, it wasn't. I mean, this country has a history of forgiving presidents with a lot of affairs. And most of the time they get away with it. And the fault is always on the women.
Yeah. And I mean, we see that illustrated in the character of Ruby Young, who is the daughter of Jane Young, who, spoilers, is Aviva, the young woman who is caught up in the scandal, its older self, who like changed her name and moved to a different city, a small town, to like get away from everything and start over. Ruby, when she finds out about her mother's scandal, thinks exactly like that. Like, she doesn't realize that. Because when you're young, everyone older than you think is an adult and should be responsible and is like fully responsible for their actions. But I mean, us as older adults now realize that, yeah, we were pretty dumb back in our early 20s. Like, we did a lot of like not smart things.
Yeah. And we were very fortunate that we social media wasn't really prevalent when we were growing up in like high school or middle school. I can't even imagine how much pressure young people have nowadays. I'm talking like an old person. Young folks these days.
I mean, even these days, we have like pressure to show off that we're someone or something on social media. Like, look at all the cool stuff we're doing, right?
I remember growing up, a lot of like teachers and older figures, they would say, oh, be careful who you talk to on the internet. It might just be like a pedophile. And nowadays it's just like, yeah, like share all of your private information. Who cares who sees your Instagram? Like honestly, what you put on the internet nowadays isn't even your real self. It is just whatever you want to project.
I don't think it's ever been your real self.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, some people try to stay authentic. Even the term authenticity is so, like, such a, like, manufactured thing, because you want to be authentic. You're trying to be authentic, but in being authentic, you're not always being yourself, right?
Yeah. Which reminds me of American Vandal. It's a great show. You should watch it. It is like one of my favorite shows of all time.
It's on my to-watch list.
You should definitely watch it.
So I really enjoyed reading this book. It was super engaging. I understood when you told me that you finished half the book in like a day. Like I finished like 2/3 of the book in a day.
Yeah.
For sure.
It really helps that the book is split into 5 different perspectives, and each of the perspective is written in a different narrative format. I found out that, like, for example, like Ruby's perspective was written in an exchange of emails with her pen pal from Indonesia.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like super clever. And also it just made me cringe throughout that section, because I was just like, oh, young people, they make so many assumptions. And it's great because it puts you in their shoes and make you realize like how stupid young people can be, how impulsive, and how the decisions you make when you're young is completely different from the decisions you might make as an adult.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, what I love about Ruby's part is also, like, I love that it's done through this pen pal, like, email thing, that you don't read the replies from her pen pal. The fact that it seems like the entire thing is on one email chain.
Yeah.
Right, because it's re. And, like, this is, because it's also very, I thought it was super, like, clever, because this is how you, because she's, Ruby is characterized as someone who's like very introverted, right? Someone who's super nerdy and book smart and not very social at school, right? But when in this format, she gets to be like more true to herself, I guess. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, she's also posturing for her pen pal.
Yeah.
Right? Showing off how she can Google things and assuming things and, kind of trying to show off,
yeah,
too, right?
I mean, what I found kind of heartbreaking in the emails is when Ruby says, like, oh, like, the people deserve to know that, like, my mom isn't fit to be mayor because she slept with a married man. And she's like, it's a crime. And the thing is, it's not a crime. And if you think about it, like, young people nowadays, like, I wonder how many of them know about the Clinton Lewinsky scandal. And I wonder, like, what information they've kind of inherited from their parents,
right?
You know?
Probably like just the Cliff Notes version. And also, like, going off that, the part where she is lashing out at her pen pal and saying, in your country, don't women get stoned for this stuff? And it's like,
it's different. Because of, I feel like every culture has, like, nowadays there's a lot of slut shaming and there's like so much patriarchy in a lot of countries. So it's just like the degree to which the patriarchy is able to control women in a certain country, it varies. And
but at this point, like, you can see how the patriarchy is already ingrained, it's already like indoctrinated Ruby into thinking a certain way about how the world works. And then at that point, she's also accepting that, like, it's not how it works. Like, so why are you defending my mom, right?
Yeah, because it shouldn't be how it works. Women should be able to do whatever they want without suffering. So, like, this, the thing is, like, the devastating cost of just like a series of really bad decisions when you make when you're 20 something years old, like it sucks. Like, the fact that Aviva Grossman can't even get a job, even though she's educated and, you know, she's pretty much bilingual. Like,
and she was like the top research associate, like, analyst in the congressman's office, right?
Yeah,
like, she has skills other than having like good looks, right?
Yeah, that's another thing that I really liked about this book. I mean, like, overall, it talks a lot about like feminism and just like patriarchy and how that really infringes on women's right. But I also really liked references to the casual misogyny in daily lives. Like with Rachel's,
Aviva,
yeah, Aviva's mom, like her online dating escapades. I'm just like, oh my God. That one guy who was just like, why did you say no to me? And just kind of like keeps harassing her.
Was that the guy, the second guy she went on a date with, or was it the husband, the second husband of her best friend?
No, the second husband of her best friend, he thinks that she's hitting on him when she's clearly not. And he's like, well, you keep mentioning like Pilates, like you're clearly coming on to me. And she's just like, I'm just talking about Pilates. Like, why... Why do you think I'm hitting on you? Like, why do you think the world revolves around you and how attractive you are?
And that comes out again in Jane Young's part where she's working with Shiley, the flower guy.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
And they all have the same, like, and it's like, I think, you know, this, I'm pretty sure it's like, and like, it's totally intentional probably that, like, they all have the same excuse, like, well, I'm already on the outs with my wife. Like, like, it's been over for a while now, right?
Yeah. I really like that metaphor of the orchid being like, oh, yeah, like, you see, you think that relationship is dead, but just keep watering it for a while and it'll come back to life. And I know that's a metaphor between, like, Rachel and Aviva's relationship, like, mother-daughter relationship. But at the same time, like, marriages are a lot harder to destroy than most people think.
I also think it's a metaphor of the just resiliency, right? Like, just because you think something might be dead doesn't mean it doesn't still have life in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but that scene where Charlie is talking to Jane about the orchid was my first hint that Jane was Aviva.
Oh, really? Like, you didn't know, like, going into the book?
No. Was that a...
Let me look at the book jacket, because...
It says she has a secret, so, like, I didn't know, like, it didn't click for me until, like, until she started talking about that orchid, because in the first part, the mother, like, Rachel gifts her that orchid for her apartment, right? Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, I think it was just, like, the title is called Young Jane Young, and it's about Aviva, this congressional intern. And I was like, well, the story is centered around her and this really sexist scandal that happened. So I'm guessing that Jane is the main character. That was just like what my thought was when I jumped into the book. So I immediately just assumed that it was Aviva. And also I was just like, how do you come back from going through something like that? You change your name. And I just assumed that she changed her name, and I was right.
Oh. I did love that this book used that, like, Rashomon-like type of setup where each character has imperfect information.
Right?
It's just from their perspective. Like, when you're reading the first part from Rachel's perspective, like, you have her interactions with Aviva where she's acting pretty, like, bratty and aggressive towards her mom. But when you read it from Aviva's perspective, you see that, like, she knows it's not her fault, but her mom's the only person she can vent to, really.
Yeah.
Like, who can take it.
Also, I liked how each woman was deeply flawed, and it didn't, like, I didn't have to like each person to understand where they came from. And I think that's, like, extraordinary writing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even though you don't agree with a character's decision, like, you know where they come from. And that's a sign of good writing.
Even during Rachel's part, I can relate to Aviva where it's like, this mom is saying stuff and doing the exact opposite of what she's saying. And she doesn't even remember all the bad things she says to her daughter.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, that one scene with Rachel and her date, where the date was just like, oh, yeah, like, there was that girl who, like, slept with a congressman, and he just, like, goes on and on about how much of a slut Aviva is without...
And how she ruined his career. Yeah. He could have been the first Jewish president, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. And, like, later on, he runs into Rachel again and he says, oh my God, I realized that you're Aviva's mom. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say all of those things. If I knew, I wouldn't have said them. And Rachel's just like, but you said them.
Yeah.
And just because she's my daughter doesn't mean that you didn't mean all the things that you said. And
it's like, yeah, like,
yikes.
Like, we should be treating everyone as actual human beings at all times, right? Which isn't what happens. Like, our brain likes shortcuts. That's just how brains work.
Right? It actually reminded me of this one interaction I had with my dad. So this was during the 2016 election.
Ooh.
And my dad was going to vote for Trump, and he did ended up voting for Trump.
What?
I'm not afraid to out him.
You're putting him on blast right now.
It's okay. He doesn't listen to this podcast. But at the time, like, it was right when news about Trump's sexual harassment to all of these women and him saying, like, oh, grab them by the pussy, like, all of that, all of those horrible things were, like, in the headlines. It was, like, fresh off the press. And I was talking to him about it, and I said, and he was just like, yeah, but, like, it has nothing to do with his job as a president, so I don't see why I can't vote for him. And I looked at him and I said, well, what if someone said that about me? What if someone like Donald Trump had sexually harassed or assaulted me? Would you be saying the same thing? And he said, no, like, I wouldn't, because that's fucked up. And I said, yeah, so why are you voting for him? And, you know, he just reverted back to his original statement, being like, well, you're not the one who is, like, being harassed. And also, harassment has nothing to do with a presidency. And I'm like, really? Then let's look at all of the other presidents who have had affairs, who have abused their wives, and compare how their presidencies were like.
And also, like, if Trump was... If you're talking about a woman in that situation, then it has everything to do with how they'll act as a president, right?
Yeah. And also, it was just like, you know, I mean, like, this is like ancient history now, because
it's 2 years.
It is ancient. It feels like it's been 10 years since 2016. And just like me saying, like, well, why aren't you voting for Hillary Clinton? And he's just like, oh, well, like, the Clinton administration, like, left a bad taste in my mouth. And I'm like, what does that mean? And, you know, he mentioned Monica Lewinsky. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, is that right? A president taking advantage of an intern, a much younger woman, left a bad taste in your mouth. What about freaking Donald Trump and him harassing all of these women? Is it not the same thing? And I was talking about how, like, Hillary Clinton had all of these, she had so much experience in politics. And, you know, she was a senator at one point, and she was Secretary of State. And none of that really mattered to my dad. And I'm sure it didn't matter to a lot of Americans during the 2016 election. And this book kind of showed that, like Jane Young, she is running for mayor. And, you know, the fact that she made this mistake when she was 20 something years old, like, it's coming back up. And it can make or break her election, despite the fact that she's highly qualified to be mayor.
It could, but also I mean, I think this book is ultimately optimistic in that it's showing that when she runs for mayor, she's like, what, 36 years old at that point. She's older. She has more perspective on, like, things. She recognizes how unfair things were. But an interesting thing during, like, Aviva's section of the book, which is written in, like, a choose-your-own-adventure style. We can get back to that later. She totally acknowledges all the choices she's made, and she's decided she's not going to be ashamed of it anymore. Right.
It's, yeah.
When she runs for mayor of her town, she makes it known that, like, this thing will come up. Right. And she's worried not because of how she might lose because of it. She's worried that, like, are you sure you want to put your money behind a campaign that might be tanked because of, like, misogynistic culture?
Yeah. Right? I thought what is it? The rich lady who pretty much...
Mrs. Morgan.
Mrs. Morgan. Oh, man. Mrs. Morgan. I loved her. She was like, hey, I have the biggest paycheck in this entire town. And if you don't win this campaign, then we'll run for another one. Like, it doesn't matter. I have money.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man. If only all the rich people in the world could be like that. It can be like Mrs. Morgan. But I like the fact when Jane is talking to Ruby and Ruby's like, I'm sorry, I was the one who wrote that op-ed to the newspaper and kind of outed you as a Viva. Jane's like, yeah, I know. And Mrs. Morgan pretty much owns the paper and she could have blocked it if I told her to, but I didn't stop her because it's not something that I'm ashamed of. It was definitely, she was definitely taken advantage of. And it made me really question, like, oh, like, slut shaming, how do you stop that? Can you just refuse to be slut shamed? And honestly, I don't know the answer to that, because shame is like such a powerful weapon.
I think part of it is just changing the conversation. And I mean, something that the book really, really illustrates is the power of like, of grassroots, right? Because if, say, Jane was running for a bigger office and this came out, it would be a bigger scandal. But because she's running for mayor of her town where she knows everybody and she like is obviously the most qualified because the person she's running against is a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she had the scandal matters less because people know who she is.
Yeah.
Like, she's been part of their lives, right? And, I mean...
it also helps that she is, like, an event planner. And, like, everyone has kind of divulged their dark secrets to her.
And that's part of it. That's part
and, like, every
politics,
single... and, you know? And, like, you know, every single person in town is just like, well, she knows my mistakes. Why can't I forgive her for her mistake? Yeah.
And, it, I mean, I think the message ultimately is that, like... the world and internet and like media tries to paint people in broad strokes, but everyone is ultimately human, right?
Yeah, there's this wonderful quote in the book, and I don't remember it like word for word, but it's in Aviva's perspective in the Choose Your Adventure section, and it's when she's in the car with Congressman Levin, and he's like, "Why are you so quiet?" And she says, and, you know, she makes an excuse being like, oh, I'm tired, like work or whatever. And it, right. And she goes on to say, it's because I am a human being with an interior world and you don't know that it exists, pretty much. And it's like, yeah, every single person has an interior world. Everybody has more than one layer to them. And it kind of sucks that social media and the news, they can just... you know, not show those layers, and they can just paint whatever picture that they want and just get money, get profit from it.
And it's not because they want to like seek the truth like journalism is supposed to work. It's because they want to get the clicks, they want to get the eyeballs, they want to get the ratings.
I mean, the really tragic thing about the whole Aviva, like Aviva's fallout is when she is discovered with Congressman Levin in that car accident, like, you know, like news break that they had an affair. And really, if it was just that, like people would have forgotten about it like within like a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that she wrote a blog and like wrote all this detail about her life and was kind of like not very good about covering up who she was working for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that was really the nail in the coffin. And it's just like, how, like, if you look back at your internet history, like what are some things that you've said on message boards or comments where you're just like, wow, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
But now it's like on the internet. Like, imagine that being blasted on the news and just like being on repeat. Like that is terrible. No one deserves that. And the thing is, that's what happened to Monica Lewinsky. Like, she had someone had recorded her conversations, and it was leaked. The transcripts of it was leaked to the press, and then later on, the audio files were released on the news. So it was just kind of like an early demonstration of people just leaking out private information about someone.
Yeah, the power of the mob.
Yeah.
What did you think about the Aviva section being a Choose Your Own Adventure?
I know that a lot of reviewers said they didn't like it.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of reviewers said that it was really cheesy, and they thought it was, they weren't satisfied with the ending. But I really thought...
What was not satisfying about it? Is it because she didn't get justice, or they didn't find out if she won or not?
Yeah, it was because, one of the two things.
You know...
Yeah, and the main complaint was just like, oh, they were like Aviva makes so many bad decisions that it was like hard to read. And I'm like, that's kind of the point of this Choose Your Adventure book, because in the beginning, I don't know if you've noticed, but she has like a lot more choices in the beginning of the Choose Your Adventure section.
Right.
And then as you go into each stage of the relationship with the congressman, the choices are vastly reduced.
Right.
And it's...
Once she has Ruby, then there's no choices at all.
There's no choices at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was reading it, I was like internally screaming. I was like, why would you make this decision?
Because you wanted to pick the other decision.
It's so bad. Like, no, within the first decision where when she's picking out her outfit.
Right.
I was like, just go for the black dress. Just go for that. And then she like picks the one outfit that was too tight. And, you know, it shows off casual misogyny of like, oh, she has big boobs. And, you know, if she was less attractive, her supervisor wouldn't have come up to her and been like, hey, this is inappropriate.
Right.
Because you have big boobs and you're a distraction. casual misogyny. But I really like the Choose Your Adventure section because you see where she could have ended the relationship at any time and this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
But at the same time, like, you have to think about how she was 20-something years old. I don't remember her exact... Like, she was 20, right?
It's her junior year.
Yeah, she's, like, 20 years old. And, you know, putting that much blame on a 20-year-old when Congressman Levin was, like, 40-something years old.
Yeah. And I also love that, like, a Choose Your Own Adventure style where it was written from the perspective of, like, an omniscient narrator.
Yeah.
And there's like parts where there's like, you'll think about this later, or like, you didn't know this yet.
Yeah. Like, there's a section, there's a passage in that chapter where it talks about how the thing with Choose Your Adventure books is that you won't get a story unless you make bad decisions. Because otherwise, if you made all of the right or good decisions, the story would be just over within like a page.
Right.
So I really like the Choose Your Adventure section because it really showed transformation. I don't think it was really redemption, but it was like you can change, and you can, even though the process can be very painful and it's slow, like there is a way to find your dignity again.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really sold this book to me, because it could have easily been like a grim portrait of like what happens when scandal destroys someone's reputation.
There was something, a redemption by retribution.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's going to take the congressman down or something.
Yeah. So I really liked this. I really like kind of like the uplifting ending.
Yeah.
In the book.
I thought it was super uplifting.
I didn't really understand why a lot of people complained about it.
I think they've watched too much House of Cards, maybe, or they just like,
oh,
I don't know.
Oh, man, like that last episode of House of Cards. I did not watch the final season. I eventually will have to, but I kind of spoiled it for myself. And I read what happens in the ending.
I have no idea.
And I'm just like, why?
I think, I don't know. I think, I don't want to speak for other people because I don't know what they think. Mm-hmm. But I, like, there's something about an ending where the main character, the protagonist, gets closure on their own stuff. And it doesn't have to be like, it's kind of like the whole thing with superhero movies, right? Like, it could be a great story. It doesn't have to involve world-changing stakes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she doesn't have to take down the system. Her coming to terms with herself and, like, running for office, like, doing something that she's always dreamed of doing, only later in life and in the different context, is a personal victory for her.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We haven't really talked about M. Beth, the wife of Congressman Levin.
Right.
And the thing is, she was surprisingly engaging to me. I really liked reading her chapter, partly because the meeting between Ruby and M. Beth was just so funny and endearing to me.
Yeah.
But I also really liked how Gabrielle, she included M. Beth in the perspectives, because you don't really get the perspective of the wife,
the spurned wife.
Yeah, the spurned wife, the wife who stayed, the politician's wife.
Right.
And, you know, like, a lot of people criticize women who stay with their cheating husbands. It's like, oh, like, why did her husband cheat in the first place? Why can't they just leave? And I liked how this chapter showed that she still, you know, she knows that her husband is unfaithful and he's kind of a man baby, but she still loves him. And even though their marriage has kind of been stagnant for years, there is like this love between them. And I really liked this one passage where she's doing her speech at the luncheon.
Uh-huh.
And she's just talking about how being cheated is not that big of a deal, but being cheated on in public is, like, the worst thing that can happen, because people are judging her instead of judging her husband. And all of a sudden, because she's a politician's wife, like, she's judged on, like, what color blazer she wears. And it's just, like, what is considered feminist? Like she has to kind of put on this show for her husband, even though she had nothing to do with the scandal, really.
Yeah. And I mean, the same with all the other characters in the book. It also shows how, like, patriarchy seeps into the mindset of everyone involved, because, like, she also has this perception of Aviva frozen in that 20-year-old, right, mm-hmm. who had that affair when she interacts with Ruby for the first time, right?
Yeah.
And starts learning about what Aviva's been up to since disappearing.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, like, even having a little bit of admiration for her that she is running for office again, like, is actually running for office in her town.
Yeah.
I thought it was, I mean, the congressman just seems like, I don't know.
I will say, I am so glad that he did not get a perspective in this book.
Yeah.
Because we did not need it.
And when we got, like, the part where he promises her a 30th anniversary party, because he probably didn't think she'd survive her cancer. Right?
Yeah. And the fact that, like, he's just like, oh, don't worry, like, I'll plan everything. And she's the one who has to do everything. And she's like, I don't even want to do this party.
There was a lot of mention of him being, like, like, a mediocre husband slash man, but a really good politician. Like, really good with his constituents, good at keeping promises. And it's like, where do you weigh those, right? You saw that in Aviva's section where she's talking to her, was it feminist studies professor? Where she was questioning, like, if the feminists are all about equality and being treated like having, like,
by giving women the choice.
Yeah. Then where were all the feminist activists when she was being harassed and, like, strung up to dry?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why didn't they take her side? Why didn't they come out against the congressman? And the professor admits that because the congressman has been good for women's politics.
Yeah, so they took the man's side in order to advance women's rights. And there's an irony there that, you know, that's really tragic.
And it's something that, that's how you play politics, right? That's, you know, you pick the side that will advance your interests. the furthest.
Yeah. There is one thing. It's a really small thing, but it did bother me reading this book. In Aviva's Choose Your Adventure section, there is like a small mention of her being raped by her by that one boy who didn't ask for permission.
Yeah.
And when I read that sentence, I was like, what the fuck? Like this is not okay. Please tell me that this is going to be addressed. And it wasn't. And I was like, she was raped. And there's like no other mention of it. And I kind of wish there was like...
I mean, she mentions it twice.
I mean, it's not... I don't know. It just... Maybe that was the intention of like making the reader like very unsettled by that, being like, okay, like she was taken advantage of when she was younger, and she's being taken advantage again.
Maybe it's part that the author didn't want to delve into.
Like, I mean, that's
didn't
true.
Didn't want to go deep into that as well, because that would like take the book to a different like level as well. But that being there, I think it's meant to unnerve you.
Yeah,
because you realize that like she's been abused before, and she just doesn't realize, or she doesn't like have the capacity to like to know that's what happened to her. Right?
Yeah,
she's justifying it as they did something without asking permission, but like she doesn't say.
Like, it's like that one section where she says like, "Oh, I'm not a feminist," to the congressman, and like her omniscient narrative says, "Well, I say this because I didn't really know what feminism was.
Right.
I thought feminism was my mom and her friend and them fighting for like women's right
vote.
To vote, not vote, but like to have abortions and to be able to find work without, you know, subjugating themselves to their husbands the entire time." And I just kind of wish it did unnerve me quite a bit. You know, it's not right for me to like demand the author to like address it, but I just wish that it was addressed. And
I think I think that's fair, but I also think it was meant to stick out.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I did like how you kind of get a complete picture of Aviva, like how much insecurity she has as a young woman, because you see how her mom treats her about her body, and like you read that she went to fat camp, and you just kind of read into like how her having big boobs is a problem for her, and how it projects this like this temptress image on her. And it's like, yeah, when you're a young woman, you're going to be obsessed with your looks, because that is kind of forced upon you as a young girl. It's like your appearance is everything. And you know, that is a form of patriarchy.
Yeah. I mean, it even affects her daughter, who personally doesn't care, but the world cares about how she looks and how she acts.
Yeah.
Right. I want to bring up something that I noticed, because my brain works this way, is Asian representation in this book. Gabrielle Zevin is, I think, part Korean, right? She's Korean.
Her mom is Korean. Her father is Jewish.
Right. The only Asian character. There are two Asian characters in this story, right? One was Embeth's cancer doctor. And one was Aviva's father's mistress.
Yeah.
Right. Who he doesn't even end up marrying.
Yeah.
And what did you think about that section where the mother just casually goes to confront the mistress?
I don't know. Like, when I read that section, I thought it was really, like, it was sad, because Rachel went to Embeth to fix, like, to fix the scandal, right? To fix the affair. And Rachel, again, went to the mistress to kind of fix her relationship with her husband. And it's like, why is she going to the women? Why can't she just go to the guy and be like, hey, put your dick where it's supposed to go? Like, it's just like the fact that she is kind of putting the responsibility on the other women to kind of clean up the mess. Like, that was really sad to me, but But the thing is, like, it happens like that. I mean, most of the time.
That's another theme that runs through, like, almost all the parts. Like, I think, like, Rachel goes to Embeth to try to solve her daughter's affair, mm-hmm. right? To try to get him to break up with her. Ruby goes to Mrs. Morgan to try to get her mom to not run for mayor anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Embeth wants to pass Ruby off to her grandmother and make it her problem. It should be, there's a line that says this should be Rachel Grossman's problem. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And also goes out of her way to, like, protect her husband from everything.
Yeah. Right?
Because the man needs to be protected.
Which is funny because it's usually this society says the opposite, being like, oh, like, women should be protective. They are of a delicate state. And yeah. It's like, really? Then why do they have to, like, deal with all of this emotional baggage, and they're kind of expected to just deal with it?
Right. And at the end, you know, I think what shows, what illustrates, like, Jane's growth is that at the end, she decides not to let someone else take care of her problems anymore.
Yeah.
Although she does ask her mom to take care of her granddaughter while she goes to the debate.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice that, like, her mom was just like, yeah, like, go to the debate.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take care of this.
I wasn't expecting the reveal of the actual father of Ruby.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that.
Because, like, during Aviva's story, like they didn't do any, like, you know, actual intercourse. So you're trying to piece together, like, who's, like, is the congressman the father? Like, I don't think they talk to each other. Like, the timing doesn't make sense, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
Unless they were still together after the accident.
Yeah.
Right? It turns out to be...
Jorge
Rodriguez.
Yeah, I thought it was really, like, really sneaky, because that seed was planted in Embeth's perspective. Because, like, she thinks that Jorge...
Wants to quit.
And Jorge's like, what are you talking about? That's not what I'm here to talk to you about.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, then... why is he there? And then you find out later, it's like, oh, he's the dad. And really, it's inconsequential.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter. And I like that. I like that he didn't really show up in Ruby's life. And that Ruby's life just kind of went on.
Yeah. And I was glad to see her and her mom reconcile, though. Like, I was glad that worked its way into the ending. If that didn't happen, I'd be more upset.
Yeah, if it was like another 10 years between...
Yeah.
Yeah, because like 10 years passed between Rachel and Jane to like reconcile. It's just like, oh no, 10 years for Ruby and Jane to reconcile. I don't think I can handle it.
Yeah. I think the relationship between Jane and Ruby is illustrating like what... like a more modern... because like Rachel is also kind of a walking stereotype in ways.
Yeah.
Like, in one way, yes, in terms of like the overbearing mother, but in other ways, like she's online dating, she's like trying new things. She has a life too. She has her own interests and like drama with her friend, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh man, I totally forgot about this. Like, what did you think about Rachel losing her job as vice principal of the school?
She was principal.
Oh, she was principal.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She was promoted to principal. She was like interim principal for a while, and then she was full-time principal, and then the scandal happened. And I think it just shows that, like...
It's just like, if she was a guy, that would not have happened.
There's this, like, scandal stench that emanates from the person that, like, unfairly affects everyone who is even remotely connected to her, right?
Yeah.
But
she does make a mistake. She does, like, take a political side.
Part of it is her, like, I think it's just, it's also, like, comeuppance for her, like, trying to break her daughter up through Embeth by, like, using her position, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but it also kind of shows that, yeah, again, like, if she was a man using her power to do personal things, it probably wouldn't have ended with her losing her job.
Well, right? It's just like that stereotype of like, oh, well, like with Congressman Levin, it's like, oh, well, he had an affair, but he's also like good at his job, so let him keep his job.
Yeah.
Whereas like with Rachel Grossman, it's like she's a really good principal, but it doesn't matter. She needs to be fired.
Yeah. And the rabbi that fires her, there's echoes of the job that Aviva almost gets at Philadelphia, where she's like, it's not my decision. I fought for you, but it's just the higher ups. Like, they don't want to be connected to the scandal, right? It's always, it's never there. It's never like, we know you're cool, but the world doesn't know you're cool. And that's like the excuse that they give.
Excuses. There's a quote that I really like, and it's when Aviva is, like, when Rachel Grossman is telling her daughter, hey, like, get a job, like, stop being in the pool and reading Harry Potter for, like, the fourth time. And Aviva's like, I'm a slut, so I can't be acquitted of that. And I was like, oh, that's a really good quote. I don't know if I said that correctly, but... That's pretty much the gist of it.
I mean, during that time, she's just like, no one will hire me. Like, I can't be anything. So I'm going to sit here and read Harry Potter for the fourth time and then read the next Harry Potter for the fourth time.
I mean, I've definitely read Harry Potter while, like, I was sick. But not this time around, no. This time around, I just watched a lot of Terrace House.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question for you, Marvin. As a dude reading this, was there anything new that you gleaned from reading the novel?
I think part of it is a unique thing for something that's specific to me is that I've always worked in spaces with strong women. Like, most of my bosses, I think I've only had one boss in my life that hasn't been a woman. For me, I don't know if I learned anything new besides like the intricacies of like Jewish American life in Florida. But it was really, I had a really good time reading the book, and like, I don't know how to like put that into like more specific nuanced analysis. Maybe if I had time to like draft like an actual review, mm-hmm. I would have more to say, but I thought this was a book that I want to recommend to more people. And I think...
Yeah. It does make me wonder, like, what other guys would think of reading this book. Because I know that you've worked with, like, really, like, outstanding women in collaboration and your other organizations that you worked for. So it just makes me wonder, like, guys who don't understand the casual misogyny that happens...
Yeah.
To women on a daily basis. Like, I mean, how would they react to this
They
book?
Should read this book. Who knows if they will? Or people will, like, I'll be interested to read reviews of the book by dudes, other dudes.
Yeah.
Right? And what they think. Because, like, a lot of it is, like, this is stuff that we all know. We all know that people are human beings. We live with, like, we interact with people all the time. We also know that how easy it is to minimize people. I think part of what this book wants to teach is how we shouldn't do that to everybody, and or when we do, won't like not to take things at face value.
Yeah, right? I think to sum it up, this book really, this book's message is to have compassion,
yeah,
to have empathy, and even if you don't agree with someone's decisions or their mistakes, if you think their mistakes are irrational and they shouldn't have made it in the first place. Be empathetic.
Yeah. That, and also I think this is a great book for people who have been through this type of shaming to show that there are second acts. There are like the orchid from Jane's room. Like, nothing is ever fully dead if you give it enough care and nurture. Like, things like...
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Donald Trump. He became president.
Let's not talk about Donald Trump.
I know.
Why you got to bring it down?
I'm sorry. Just edit that out. I'm just saying that it is not too late to pursue what you think was impossible.
Donald Trump's a symptom, not a... Here's what happens when we let all the antagonistic elements of this book run rampant.
Yes.
Without doing anything to stop it.
Yes.
Yes. And I guess that'll do it for our discussion of Young Jang Young. If you have anything else to add to our conversation or want to discuss things that we may have glossed over or missed, please sign up on our Goodreads forums. We always love reading about your thoughts about the books. And I mean, there's... Like, Rira and I are only two people.
We don't even meet that often, so yeah.
There are tons of perspectives out there that we would love to to know about. So you can go to our Goodreads forum by going to goodreads.com and searching Books and Boba. Rira.
Yes.
What are we reading for in the month of January?
Okay, so this part is a little bit tricky. I'm reading a book that I have not read, but Marvin has read. It's actually Marvin's copy, and I have not returned it for like 2 years because...
Has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long. I've had your book for 2 years because I'm like, oh boy, like this book is like 600 pages. I really need an incentive to finish this. And I decided to make it a Books and Boba pick. And it's actually, because it's so long, we're making it a January and February book club pick to give people ample time to finish it.
Makes sense.
And it's Ken Liu's Grace of Kings.
Yes.
Yes. Finally, right? Marvin will finally get his copy of the book back. But this is not all, because I don't want Marvin to go 2 months without reading a book. So I'm assigning him something that I've already read. And for the people who have already read Grace of Kings. And that is Rainbirds by Clarissa Gonawan. I really love this book, and I hope you like it too.
All right.
So,
do we get your copy? Do we do
it? No, I borrowed it from the library, Marvin. Oh, no. So maybe you should get a library card.
This will be our special bonus content where I go get my library card. Well, maybe someday in January we will make a trip to the library and document this on Instagram for all to see. Me filling out my personal information.
You'll look back on this 10 years from now, Marvin, and be like, wow. This was when I got my first adult library card, and you'll be thankful.
Actually, I haven't. I can't say that. Awesome. I'm excited that this is, like, is this our first epic fantasy?
I don't know. Because we both read Jade City. I mean, it's not epic fantasy, but like...
But that wasn't a book club pick, though.
That's true. You also have a book that I... you also have my copy of I Believe in a Thing Called Love by Maureen Gu, which
definitely
haven't read.
Not. Epic fantasy.
No.
That is K-drama rom-com. What's the name for, what's the genre, book genre name for K-drama rom-com?
I think it's just that.
Well, Maureen Gu's very good at it. I want to read her, one about food trucks.
Oh, The Way You Make Me Feel?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, read it on your own time.
And that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for joining us. As we discuss Young Jin Young by Gabrielle Zevin, as you may have picked up, Reaver and I both really, really love this book. And and if you listen to this entire discussion and have not read the book yet, you should go read the book. Now you're armed with our perspective. And if you have any new things to glean, good reads.
And also, please share which book club pick from Books and Boba you liked most in 2018.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to the Potluck Podcast Collective for letting us be part of their group. The Potluck Podcast Collective is a collective of Asian American podcasts featuring great shows such as Books and Boba, Saturday School, The Collabcast, First of All, They Call Us Bruce, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, and more. You can find all of our great programs by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. Special thanks also to Visual Communications. This podcast was recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studios within the Visual Communications offices. Visual Communications, of course, is an organization that supports Asian American films and media through their programs such as the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival and the Armed with a Camera Fellowship. You can learn more about VC at vconline.org. And on that note... Thanks for joining us. Happy New Year.
Happy 2019.
We'll see you in the new year.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Phil Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation...
the good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallusbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.